Today's playing field community member interview is with somebody whose professional career spanned three decades. Welcome to performer, professional golfer, and current broadcaster, Brad Faxton. Welcome, Brad.
Ben, great to be with you.
It's I'm not, big into golf. I don't really play that much. So when you're, is it former, or is it like you are, once you're a professional golfer, you're a professional golfer?
I guess you could say former PGA Tour player would be correct. I always think of myself, if somebody says, what do you do? I say, well, I'm a PGA Tour player, but then you can say you're a senior tour player, but yeah, right. I'm definitely more former than latter.
Yeah, as we've learned from, Tom, when you're retired from the NFL, you're kind of retired, but you can't really go and play, and so you can do former NFL, but I got it now. So as a fellow New Englander, I hear you're a Pats fan. Like, let's start light here. What do you think about the upcoming season? What do you think about the Pats?
Well, I moved, like I told you before we started, right. I moved to Florida, but I still have deep New England ties. We were Patriots season ticket holders from the early 2000s till we moved to Florida in 2013 or 14. So I was lucky enough to get to know the Crafts a couple times, got to sit in their box, got to meet Tom a few times. Matt Light became a friend. I will never be anything but a Patriots fan. Gotten to know Belichick a little bit. Like I said, I know Brian Oates pretty well. So I have the gear on football season. And I'm optimistic. I like that. It seems like the draft was pretty good. It seems like it always is questionable. This seems like a few holes were filled. I can't season to start.
Well, I'm excited. Maybe DeAndre Hopkins will we'll see. Either way, it'll be fun for sure that opening night when Tom comes back. But as I mentioned, I know you are not a golfer, but I know you start kind of get a warm up on, a little driving range, all that. So some easy questions, start you off here. Hear you've been described as the best pure putter in golf history. Do you play putt-putt golf? And if you do, are you you're just undefeated?
I don't seek putt-putt golf out, but it's funny. I did a putting event a few years ago in Vegas. It was a big money event. And three of the top putt-putt golfers in the world came to play in this thing. And they were playing for purses where you could win $100,000. And in a typical putt-putt championship where they travel all over the world, they could only win four or 5,000. And I said, okay, listen, so if I go play in a putt-putt tournament or go to a putting green, who's going to win? He goes, if you go to grass and you have to read the green, you're going to kill us. But if we go on putt-putt with windmills and stuff, we're going to kill you. So I thought that was pretty funny. Because once they played a course, they know where to hit it. They never miss.
Yeah. Do you have a longest drive that you remember? Do you remember your longest drive?
No, I was never known to be a player that hit it very far. And if I had a long drive, it had to have hit the cart path a few times to get down there. Yeah. So no.
Talking about longest drive and even just hitting the ball, if you close your eyes and you hit the ball, could you tell by the sound of it that you knew where it was good shot?
It's funny you're asking that, Ben. I was talking to a friend about putting the other night, and it was a famous Spanish golfer named Seve Ballesteros who has passed away 10 years ago now, I think. But he used to putt at night because he liked to hear the sound and not to worry about what his stroke looked like. But there's a common term now on tour when a player hits the ball and strikes it well, players will say nice audio, meaning the sound of the ball. There's something distinct to a crisp shot. And even if you have played the game just a little bit, sounds like you played a little bit, you know what it's like when you hit one well, and you can hear that the contact of the ball, the strike against the club against the ground, the explosion of the turf. And it's a definitive sound, and it's the best feeling in golf. I was practicing yesterday at a great place down towards a cape called Old Sandwich Golf Club. I believe Tom's a member there. I saw his locker. And yeah. I hit some balls with some friends. And to me, I'm still such a golf geek. It's all nearly 62 years old. I hit it so well yesterday. I'm like, I could go beat Rory McIlroy now. And I know I couldn't come close, but it's just, that's why I love this game of golf so much.
That's awesome. Well, do you have, I asked a couple of people who are big golfers in my life, and they wanted to know if you have a favorite golf course.
Well, I have a, I always get nervous politically about saying one, but I think I'm pretty safe to say there's a place in New Jersey just outside of Philadelphia called Pine Valley, and it's perennially rated number one in the country or the world. I've been a member at this club since 2005. I was just there a few days ago, and I think it's the best course in the world. But you're never going to offend me if you said Old Sandwich could be number two, or Sunningdale in Europe, or Royal Melbourne and Australia, or Shinnecock Hills. I mean, there's so many great places to play, but I like to say Pine Valley because I can never get in trouble.
There you go. I forgot about the
And
political
Sam's
side of
good.
it. Well, talking about getting in trouble and the juicy stuff here, like talk to me, like just high level what you're thinking around the LIV PGA and all that drama. So where things stand today? Are you happy with it? Do you think it's good for the game?
Well, listen, Ben, I don't know that this is good for the game right now. I think it's going to be good for the game once it gets accepted. In the next 2 days, Tuesday, Wednesday, there's huge congressional Senate hearings about this possible. It's not a merger, really. It's an agreement. And how does this affect? And it gets pretty detailed. The PGA Tour has been a non-profit, right? It's a 501c6, and it's a tax exempt. Structure, organization, trade organization. It's not like the NFL where there's different owners. And so if you're a company like FedEx and you want to put all this money in to help with purses and bonuses, they can deduct that money. A lot of the money goes to charity. And right now that's being threatened. And to add in even more drama, yesterday, one of the PGA Tour policy board members, an independent director named Randall Stephenson, he was a former CEO of AT&T, longtime sponsor of two of the tournaments. He withdrew from the board, and it was a very interesting, I should say, timing of this with the situation going on in D.C. with the LIV golfers. And I have a feeling that he and a few others are going to try and attempt some sort of coup to get rid of the Jay Monahan and the staff. I mean, there's a lot of shit going on that you if you don't follow this closely, you don't know how important this is for everything right now. And the LIV golfer guys that went PGA Tour players were never given money up front, right? And I thought that was one of the coolest parts about the game is if you were Rory McIlroy or John Rahm or Scottie Scheffler, you had the same chance every week as Lucas Glover or name anybody down more towards the bottom. But now their golfers are paying Phil Mickelson and Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, hundreds of millions of dollars. Upfront money, which players have never had before, never been entitled to before. And how does that go forward if this agreement goes together? Do these guys get penalized? Do they get, hey, you can come back, but you got to give money back? I don't know how this is going to work.
Get your popcorn out. It'll definitely be interesting trying to follow along. It's something like every day that comes out, but it's wild, definitely
Yeah,
wild.
and the Ryder Cup is later on this year in September. It's in Rome for the first time being in Italy. The Ryder Cup only happens every 2 years, and it's in Europe this year. And there's still unknowns on whether a player like Brooks Koepka, who went to the LIV Tour, who finished second in the Masters and first at the PGA, won the PGA, will he be even allowed to play? Because those LIV golfers don't have world ranking points. They don't get to play in the PGA Tour events where all the points are to qualify. So there's going to be a lot of pressure on the CEO of the PGA of America, which is a different entity than the PGA Tour. They run the Ryder Cup. And then the captain, Zach Johnson, is he going to go to the players and say, hey, can we put Brooks Koepka on the team, even though he hasn't played, for the tour? It's drama everywhere. I'm flying tonight to go televise and work for Golf Channel this week for the Scottish Open, then the final major of the week, the British Open, is in 2 weeks, and that's the last chance the LIV golfers will get to play where they could make more points for Ryder Cup. So a lot of stuff will be determined in the next couple of weeks.
I was gonna say, stay tuned to you on TV to really for all the updates. How are you enjoying the broadcast? Thanks.
No, it's been good. I got an offer this year to work for NBC, and NBC owns the Golf Channel. They own Sky Sports, which is the UK's broadcast team. So I've kind of been dabbling on all sides, and NBC does not only do they do the British Open in 2 weeks, they did the US Open a couple weeks ago in LA, the Ryder Cup in Rome. So, you know, you get a lot. We have a great team, great producer, Dan Hicks, Paul Azinger, entire team goes out on it, Ben. And there's a lot of energy and there's a lot of interest this year. I think golf's, it's at an all time high. And having the US Open, I don't know how much you watch out in LA, but you know, when you can watch back here on the East Coast from 8 to 11 o'clock, the ratings were off the charts. Yeah.
Amazing. That's awesome. Well, if you're broadcasting anything like this interview, you can tell just how passionate you are for the game and all that. So we'll have to stay tuned. So any advice for Tom, who's going to be getting into broadcasting? Like, what would you tell him?
Well, I worked with Joe Buck when I first started doing television in 2015. Fox Sports got the USGA's events, so we did eight or so events. And I think Tom, first of all, you don't get a lot of instruction on what to do, right? You know, you're told to be yourself. And I think for Tom, like so many of the football quarterbacks that have been good at it, he knows the game intimately. He can predict what's going to happen. And I think when they predict, and Romo did it early on, could tell you what was going to happen before it happened. And even if they're wrong, there's conversation for it.
It can go other way though. Like, I've watched games with Tom before. It's the worst because he's like, all right, this is going to happen next play. And you're like, all right, it happened. So like, and I know Romo had to deal with that too, where you just like, you don't want to ruin the game for people either.
No, but I mean, it just shows you how good they are. And, you know, I think, you know, Tom's going to, I think he might be surprised at how much time this will take because he's knowing him a little bit and he's not going to want to be half-assed at this, is he? He's going to want to be the best that's ever done it. And you know he's going to have to put the work in it. You have to get there a few days early. You have to talk to the players. But I just can't wait for the first game that he does it. And I don't know. I wonder if they would ever make it be a Patriots game for some reason. That would be kind of cool.
All right. I wonder how
Belichick would treat Brady once he gets to the press, you know? Would it be like he treats everyone else?
Yeah, although, you know, I have heard from some players on the Pats that, like, it's like the minute you retire, the minute, like, Belichick's not competing with you, it's like you're your best buddies. But going back to, the green here, you know, I know you, as I mentioned, the opener, right, your career has lasted over three decades. I saw 708 PGA events played. You turned professional in 1983. Like, talk to me about longevity. What would you contribute to that, like, you know, that three-decade career? Stubbornness or what?
So that stat about how many career events I played in, I saw a list of all-time players, and I'm like 12th or 13th on that list. And the players of today will never play that much. And that doesn't count the, you know, 100 or so senior tour events I played in. But I thought it was, you know, as a youngster, when I turned pro in 83, I was 21. I wanted to play every tournament just so I could get to know the places, the courses. Do I like to play? Plus, I wanted to make money. I wanted to become better. And that's, I loved the game so much, you know, so to be able to go and play 28 to 30 weeks a year early on was what I thought was necessary. I don't know if it made me play my best. Because I look now, when I look back at it, the best players in the world, whether it was Jack Nicklaus or Tiger Woods, they were sparing with their time. They didn't do it every week. And maybe they had certainly more confidence than I did. But I think there's a sweet spot number of like 20 to 25 events, and you got to figure out what's best for you.
And so talk to me about, you know, again, jumping back off the green, if you will, but – I've seen you describe it as probably like one of the most charitable guys in the, you know, the game of golf and just general and being really involved in the community. So tell us what you have going on in the community and how we can support you here at Playing Field.
Well, thank you. Billy Andrade, another golfer on the tour from Rhode Island, and I started a children's charity back in the early 90s. And in a couple of weeks, we have the 30th anniversary of our first event. We have a bunch of our board members and some of the celebs that have supported us in the past coming to Billy's house to just kind of do a cocktail party. It's a little bit of a fundraiser, just kind of a thank you to everyone. We still give out hundreds of thousands of dollars every year to 30 to 40 different charities in the state of Rhode Island where we grew up.
Yeah.
And that's meaningful to us. We care about it. We know the directors of these different foundations. To see a smile on a kid's face that you hadn't seen before is really the driving force behind it. And Billy and I were lucky that CVS, the big pharmacy, was a Rhode Island-based company. The CEO back in the late 90s, Tom Ryan, who was a good friend, helped us to start a tournament that we've done here in Rhode Island in Barrington. We did that for over 20 years and raised over $25 million for different charities in the state of Rhode Island. So that impact has been a big positive in our lives. I feel like we don't do enough, even though we've done a lot. The PGA Tour, you know, they've given over $2 billion to different charities around the country, and it's pretty impressive what they've done. And I think we've just kind of tried to be like that then. And we never really tried to make a lot of noise about it, but I think it's time to make some noise about it because it's worthwhile.
There you go. Well, we'll help you make some noise and we'll link to it. So people can check that out. So, is there one moment from your career that stands out? I don't know if it was your winning the Buick Open in 91, or is there just like one shot, one moment that just like you'll never forget?
I think there's a few, but the Ryder Cup was always one of those events you wanted to play in. To make the Ryder Cup, which only happened, like I said, on every 2 years, and there's only 12 guys that make the team. I made that team twice, and that representing your country. It was our, before Olympics allowed golf in 16, that was our Olympics. And to be able to represent your country. And I remember first time I played in 95 at Oak Hill, I got on the first tee of the first practice day. And President George Herbert Walker Bush was standing on the first hole with Byron Nelson waving an American flag. And this voice of God came out of nowhere and said, at first to play representing the United States was Brad Faxon. And I was there with three other players, Peter Jacobson and Corey Pavin and Lauren Robertson. I thought I was going to throw up right there on the first tee. I was so nervous, so excited to have the president, former president, right there. I don't know. That's probably the best thing that's ever happened. We didn't win that match. We lost by half a point. So that still bugs me. But I would say representing your country, I don't think you can get anything better than that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool moment. It's interesting though, right? With golf, if you're a lineman and you're getting fired up and hyped up, you know, national anthem and all this, you can go use that to go hit somebody. But with golf, you have to kind of pull that back. And so, did you practice that, like kind of almost just managing your emotions? It's such a huge part of golf.
Yeah, and that's something we still talk about. And I don't know what the answer is, because if you don't get mad, then you don't care enough. You know, you have to have some temper, but it's how do you manage that where it doesn't affect your shots? And you know, if you're not playing good offense in golf, there's no defense, right? You can't sit back and guard somebody else or stop another guy from playing well. All you're out there with is your clubs, your ball, and the caddy. The caddy takes a lot of abuse sometimes, more verbal than physical, but they're some of the most important people in the game. And they got to be sports psychologists. They got to be like your wife. They got to be everything. But the one thing I heard from one of the top players, a guy named Webb Simpson. Webb's on the PGA Tour's policy board. He won the U.S. Open. He's won the Players Championship. He said he gave himself 45 seconds, and he used this term called critical response time, CRT. And he said, if he hit a bad shot, he would allow himself 45 seconds. And look, you always have, you know, 4 or 5 minutes between shots, because you got to walk to the next one. Yeah. And I thought, you know, that's pretty good to have a name for it. And you know, the fact that you could sit there and pretend you could smile all day long, that doesn't happen.
Yeah. But was there something, would you tell yourself anything, like try to calm you down, or you would just kind of take a couple deep breaths?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about breathing a lot of times. I had one caddy for 14 years, and we tried to talk about sports and between shots, get our mind off of it, which is because it's incessant. But yeah, you had different ways to get rid of the bad shots, and you always hit more bad shots than good shots and have bad rounds than good rounds. But If you watch different players like Tiger Woods, you've seen him swear on TV, see him smash clubs. Everybody's done it.
Right.
So to say you can't play good with a temper, that's false.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Brad, I really appreciate the time today, the insight on the game of golf, and in you know, your mind as well. And I guess go Pats, and we'll be following along, watching you the rest of the golf season. So thank you.
Well, thanks, Ben. I'm heading over to Scotland tonight. Like I said, I've been helping Rory McIlroy a little bit with his putting the last 5 years. He's one of the most dynamic players in the game, and I know you're just starting to get into this golf world a little bit. But the last time Rory McIlroy won a major championship, it was in 2014 at the same course called Royal Liverpool, Hoylake they call it. And he's going back there as the odds-on favorite. So this is a big week. It will be a big week for golf, for Rory, and for NBC to showcase it.